Welcome to Tastes of the Tropics. And now, here are your hosts, Gretchen Schmidt and Christina Favretto.
Welcome to Tastes of the Tropics. My name is Gretchen Schmidt. I'm with Edible South Florida Magazine.
I'm Christina Favretto. I'm a food historian and food lover.
And we're here at the Miami Book Fair today with Larry Olmsted, whose book, Real Food, Fake Food. Boy, oh boy, Larry, it made us, when we read it, like, gee, how do we know what to eat? It's, you know, our mission at Edible South Florida is really to promote local food and know your farmer and that sort of stuff. But we also eat Parmesan cheese. We buy olive oil for our cooking. We all love to cook. And here in South Florida, we, of course, depend on seafood, and it's not all as it seems, is it?
It certainly isn't. Seafood as a whole is probably the worst category for fraud. And it's not because fishermen are inherently more evil than cattlemen or poultry farmers. It's because we, as Americans, are pretty disconnected from where our food comes from to begin with, but much more so with seafood. You know, we all know what a chicken or a cow looks like, but very few of us know what the fish we eat looks like, and we rarely buy it whole. Most of the fish sold in the United States is imported, more than 90%. A lot of that comes in already processed into frozen fillets and steaks. You rarely see a whole fish, don't know what it looks like. And on top of that, if you go to buy chicken, you're probably choosing between organic and regular. There's two choices. There's 1,700 commercially available kinds of seafood in the United States. So the chances that you know anything besides maybe a trout or a salmon looks like is pretty slim.
So before we delve into some actual examples of food forgeries and fakeries and scams, what brought you to this world of food suspicion and investigative journalism?
Well, I've written on food and travel for over 20 years. I love food. And when I travel, I make it a point to eat what locals eat wherever I go, whether it's in the U.S. or elsewhere in the world, and especially if there's a specialty a place is known for. And I think I've been to Italy many times, and I constantly hear from travelers come back from Italy, and they say, why is the food so much better there? Even the simplest spaghetti with red sauce is better there. And well, when I looked into it, I found out the reason why is, well, the tomatoes aren't fake, the spices aren't fake, the oil isn't fake, and the cheese isn't fake. So it's a pretty simple dish, but once you substitute poor quality imitations for all those things, which we do in this country where we have like San Marzano tomatoes that are grown in California, it's really hard to make that same kind of food. And the tipping point for me was Kobe beef. I went to Japan, I had Kobe beef. I'd had it at some fancy restaurants in the U.S. or thought I had. I came back. I had it again. There's no similarity whatsoever between what I had in Japan and what I had here. And I looked into that and quickly discovered that the importation of Japanese beef was banned categorically by the USDA here. Every single restaurant in the United States claiming to serve Kobe beef for burgers or sliders, which is hundreds of restaurants, were just lying blatantly to their customers. And I wrote an article about that for Forbes. It was of the roughly 6,000 articles I've written in my career, by far the biggest response I ever got. Outcry, people were really upset about this. And Kobe beef is not even an important food in terms of, you know, it's not like you feed your kids it on a Saturday, you know, it's not something that affects a lot of people. So I started to think, if this is such a hot button topic, what if it was also other foods we eat? And that's what led me to write this book.
And it's not even Kobe-ish. It's just, for a lot of these foods that you talk about, it's not even remotely close to the real thing.
Right. It's a big sliding scale, right? At one end, there's fake foods that are imitations of the original. And then at the other end, there are fake foods that have nothing whatsoever to do with the original. And to me, you will go to a restaurant and you order lobster ravioli and there's no lobster in it. Mm. That's pretty fake. It doesn't get much more fake than
that.
Right. Yeah.
We had on the west coast of Florida, the Tampa Bay Times earlier in the year, writer Laura Riley did a wonderful story called Farm to Fable, mm-hmm. where she was tracking down restaurants that were claiming to be farm to table. In fact, the farms had never sold the restaurants or had sold so long ago. And she also talked about fake food in that. And of course, they did DNA testing because that really is sort of the only way that you can be assured of knowing what you're eating.
Especially for seafood.
Right. Yeah. And it's so ironic here in South Florida, where people expect, especially visitors here, but locals too, mm-hmm. we expect when we order seafood, we expect our grouper to be local, that grouper sandwich, when in fact it may well not be.
And, you know, one of the rules of fake food, not just fake seafood, but across the board, is the more processed and less recognizable the food is, the more likely it is to be faked. So you go buy a grouper, you probably get a grouper. You buy a piece of fish that's breaded, deep fried, covered in tartar sauce, coleslaw on a bun, now it becomes much more easy to disguise. I ate dinner last night at Joe's Stone Crab here in Miami, which I like to eat whenever I come to Miami. And you get those stone crabs and you know that they're stone crab claws because they can't put anything else on that plate and tell you it is. But if you were to say go to a restaurant and they had stone crab bisque, and it was $8, I would immediately become suspicious because you think how much a stone crab claws cost and how unrecognizable chopped crab comes once you put it in a soup or something. That's when you tend to get ripped off. So the grouper, because so many people eat it battered and fried, kind of lends itself to that fraud.
And shrimp are another problem. Now, we know we have beautiful Key West shrimp, and you know, Key West pinks are a pretty common thing here. But shrimps, even those are farmed in some of the most disgusting conditions, the ones that are coming from Southeast Asia, aren't they?
Absolutely. I mean, I personally made a lot of changes in the way I eat as a result of researching this book, and probably the biggest were shrimp and sushi. And I love shrimp. And so to a lot of people, shrimp is the most consumed seafood in the United States, pounds per capita. But once I worked on this book and I had time to sort of reflect on that, I remembered when I was growing up, you know, you might go out to your birthday to like a steakhouse, Morton's or something like that, and they'd have a shrimp cocktail. And that was like a special occasion meal. You'd get these five big shrimp and it would be $20. And there was never a notion when I was young that you could get all you could eat popcorn shrimp for $9.95. And it's sort of, I think, the driving up of this expectation that shrimp is cheap and readily available that has led to it all being farmed in Southeast Asia, and almost all of the shrimp sold in the United States is, and it's farmed under extremely dubious conditions with no oversight from our government. A lot of times we don't know what country it came from. There's environmental issues involved in the production of shrimp. There's humanitarian, there's slave labor used, but you know, even if those sort of moral issues don't offend people, some people, you know, feel differently about that, the fact that there's a lot of banned and illegal antibiotics and chemicals used in shrimp farming should bother people. And as a matter of fact, in 2015, since the FDA started stepping up inspections of arriving shrimp because President Obama appointed this presidential task force to combat seafood fraud, last year there were a record number of what the FDA calls import refusals, which means basically they inspect a load of shrimp, they find it contains illegal drugs, and they say it can't come in. And the FDA touts it as a good thing that there's a record number, but there's only a record number because they're looking.
Right.
It's not like the problem is going away.
Well, you name names in your book, which I really appreciate. One of them, as a side note, is you actually call out Mario Batali's restaurant Babbo for trying to pass off, well, at least not Parmesan. Maybe it was...
I think it was Grana Padano.
Grana Padano,
which is
but Parmigiano prices.
But Escolar, which is a fish that you see a lot here. Now you've made me think, no, it's not a good idea to have too much of it.
Well, it's one of those things, it makes some people sick. If you've had it a lot and it doesn't make you sick, I wouldn't worry about it because it's not a result of a chemical. It's a naturally occurring wax in the fish that makes people sick. So if it doesn't bother you, it doesn't bother you. The bigger problem to me is that in most of the country, people don't eat escalar as escalar. The escalar they're getting is they're ordering tuna in sushi restaurants, and escalar is the number one substitute for it. And a good comparison would be tilapia, right? People buy tilapia, they eat tilapia, it's inexpensive, it's a farm fish. To me, if you want to eat tilapia, I personally don't because I don't like to eat a lot of farm fish, but if you do, you're getting it, you're not getting ripped off, it's real food. You're getting what's advertised. But if you order red snapper or grouper and you get tilapia and now suddenly you're paying five times as much for it, now you're getting ripped off. So to me, that's the thing. It's not that tilapia and escalar are the villains. It's just that they're often stand-ins. And just yesterday, I taped an episode of the TV show The Doctors. It hasn't aired yet. I taped it yesterday. They did their own investigation. They went to 13 or 15 sushi restaurants in LA, ordered tuna. 100% of the tuna that they ordered was escalar. 2020 did the same thing in New York City about a year ago. 15 restaurants, whatever, 100% of the tuna was escalar.
Wow.
Here in Florida, at Novi University, they do a lot of DNA. They have a DNA testing lab there, and they have a class. Every semester, the kids go out and test sushi as part of their coursework. The last two terms, 80% and 100% of the tuna
in
escalar
Florida.
In Florida. So this is a really big problem. And some of these fish from Asia Escalar, Swai, Panga, Bassa, they're imported in quantities of, you know, 50 to 100 million pounds. And I've never known anybody to go down to the supermarket and say, you know, give me a pound of panga. It's sold as all these other fish, you know, and these fish are being imported specifically to be passed off as higher priced fish.
And the thing is, people are getting away with this. There's an expression, don't bleep on my leg and tell me it's raining. But these people are honestly looking into our face and selling us things at inflated prices. It's outrageous, and I wonder that more people don't get in trouble for it. What do you think is at the root of that?
The two things are that the biggest surprise, people ask me, well, like, what was the biggest surprise in writing your book? And they expect me to say, like, seafood or Kobe beef or whatever. Mm-hmm. But to me, the biggest surprise was finding out that restaurants are really largely unregulated. The USDA and FDA labeling regulations that apply to food you buy does not apply to restaurants. So if you're a supermarket and you buy choice beef and sell it as prime, you will almost certainly get in trouble. The USDA takes that very seriously. But if you're a supermarket and you buy choice beef and you sell it as prime, it's not there's no enforcement. It's not the USDA. You're not labeling it. You're not selling it at retail. It's very, very easy for restaurants to do that. Now, in Florida in particular, actually probably now has some of the better enforcement as a result of these past scandals. The Grouper scandal, the Tampa Bay Times article, which was probably the best article of its kind done in the country in recent years. It's just sad that it was limited to Florida, because I think if you replicated that almost anywhere, you would get the same results.
Right.
But after the Grouper scandal, the Florida State Economics Crime Division actually prosecuted restaurants, a big importer. It's funny, because I always say, one of the fish that you can look at and always tell it what it is salmon, right? It doesn't really look like any other fish. Well, it turns out that Chilean steelhead trout actually is pink and looks like salmon, and a distributor down here in South Florida got busted for importing, I don't know, a million pounds of steelhead trout and selling it as salmon. So I spoke to the former commissioner of the FDA, and he said, it doesn't matter what fish it is, I can tell you unequivocally, if there's a fish that looks like another fish and it's cheaper, somebody is going to sell it as the other fish. It's the simplest fraud. And I had other experts, lawyers, tell me it's just like dealing drugs. Same kind of margin, same kind of organized crime, but nobody goes to jail. Now, if you had a choice between selling fake fish and selling heroin and knowing that you're not going to get in trouble, which one are you going to do?
Well, some of those big mansions you see on South Beach are built on fake fish. Now we know. And you also mentioned a very famous grated cheese that comes in a green cylindrical can where it's 100% grated, or, you know, but where
it is 100% grated. That part is true.
It's 100% grated. You point that out. So there are also slippery semantics involved.
I talk a little bit about this kind of labeling in my book. I actually talked more, but we cut it out because it got really technical and it sort of doesn't flow with the rest of the book. But there's a classic example is you can go buy a cereal, say, I don't want to name a brand because I haven't researched this in a while, but, you know, some kind of cornflake type cereal with blueberries. And it will have a picture of the cereal, which is flakes and blueberries, and it will say blueberries. It doesn't say with blueberries. It says like blueberry flakes, 100% real fruit. And all of that is true, except there's no blueberries in it. The 100% real fruit is either cranberries that have been dehydrated and dyed blue, or apples that are dried and dyed blue and reformed into round shape. And you can look at the ingredients and see that there's no blueberry, but it's blueberry flavored, so they're allowed to call it blueberry. It is real fruit, so they're allowed to call it real fruit, and they can have this picture. But no rational consumer is going to assume that that box that says 100% real food in huge letters, blueberry, and has pictures of blueberries, doesn't have blueberries in it. And one scientist said, the big print giveth and the small print taketh away. So you got to look at the ingredient panel.
To remember that.
Are we getting any better on this? I mean, are consumers getting smarter about reading the labels now? Because there has been an effort. Certainly nutritional labels have gone through some changes that make them easier to understand. But what about the message behind the marketing message behind the product themselves?
I don't think from that perspective it's getting better. If anything, it's been getting worse because of the use of natural and some of these terms the FDA refuses to define. And their policy is basically if they don't define it, you can't use it wrong because you can't violate any definition. And it was the same way until the early 2000s when they defined organic. Producers could slap organic on anything, and they did. And there was a lot of public outcry, people paying more money for organic food that wasn't any different. Once the USDA defined organic, that problem kind of went away. The new one is natural, pure, all of these things. And the FDA, it's not an oversight. They've held hearings and decided not to define natural. And I think I say in the book, I forget the stat, but in 2014, one out of four or one out of five new products in any category of food in the United States introduced had the word natural on the label. And these are not remotely natural products. What has gotten better is public knowledge. And I actually did a segment, an interview on a New York news station earlier this year, and they sent a reporter into the street and asked people at random, like, when I say fake food, what comes to mind? And people said, oh yeah, I've heard about olive oil, I've heard about seafood. And a lot of these, 60 Minutes did a big expose on olive oil earlier this year. Inside Edition did one on lobster and one on seafood. There's more and more of this, and people are becoming more cognizant that they have to be wary. And even when